And now it's time for our weekly political junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
Allegations of political meddling in the firing of U.S. prosecutors hang over the Bush administration, and the attorney general faces the cameras and almost apologizes, acknowledging that mistakes were made. He said his chief of staff is out. Plus, the Senate votes to debate Iraq with the crowded field there for the GOP nomination in 08. Senator Chuck Hagel makes a big non-announcement announcement. As always, we invite you to call in with your comments and questions for the political junkie. What questions do you have about U.S. Attorney Gate, the latest in the race for 2008, or the rest of the week's political news? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And as always, with us here in Studio 3A is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our very own political junkie. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And let's start with those questions about the firings of the U.S. attorneys. Bring us up to speed on the allegations. The focus, I guess, shifted yesterday from the dismissals themselves to how information about those dismissals was delivered on Capitol Hill.
Well, exactly. Everybody's always said from the beginning that an administration has the right to dismiss a U.S. attorney. They serve at the pleasure of the president. But for the last 3 months, seven of these eight U.S. attorneys were fired on December 7th. For the last 3 months, the administration has been saying that we have nothing to do with this. It's basically productive these attorneys are. Nothing to do with politics. And then, lo and behold, we find out that there are email exchanges between Harriet Myers and the chief of staff of Alberto Gonzalez, the U.S. Attorney General.
Harriet Myers, the president's lawyer.
That's right, who's no longer the president's lawyer, but probably needs a lawyer now. But basically talking about, how can we get rid of these people and get our people? For example, there was one instance where Karl Rove's pal became the new U.S. attorney in Arkansas, replacing somebody. So it's obviously playing politics. Again, does the administration have the right to do this? Absolutely. We've seen this in previous administrations, although not to this extent. But having said that politics played no part of this all along, and suddenly finding out that, they've been not being honest with us all along, that's what's gotten the administration in trouble.
Yesterday, the attorney general addressed reporters at a news conference. He didn't apologize, but acknowledged that mistakes were made. Let's take a listen.
I accept responsibility for what happened here. And I regret the fact that information was not adequately shared with individuals within the Department of Justice, and that consequently information was shared with the Congress that was incomplete. But the charge for the chief of staff here was to drive this process. And the mistake that occurred here was that information that he had was not shared with individuals within the department who was then going to be providing testimony and information to the Congress.
Dana Milbank covers political theater for The Washington Post. He's their national political reporter. He joins us now from their studio here in Washington. He was at the attorney general's news conference yesterday. Dana, nice to have you back on the program.
Good to be with you.
And I take full responsibility and my deputy's stepping down.
Oh, I don't think you should take responsibility at all. No, you know that when they start with the mistakes were made, the passive voice was used and scandals were created and resignations were requested, you know you've got a problem. And you'd think they'd learn and at least shake up the language a little bit, if nothing else. But I thought Gonzalez came out and said that he was responsible, but then he had nothing to do with it. He said his chief of staff had resigned, but then he said, well, yeah, he's actually still working in the building. So I'm not sure how he advanced the ball yesterday, and he's probably in just about as much trouble right now.
And this was a quick news conference.
It was 9 minutes on my analog watch, but he couldn't get out of there fast enough. I was watching his toes wiggling in his feet. He was shifting his feet back and forth. The questions were just being shouted and finally just turned and wheeled after saying that he thinks after all this that the right decision was made, which sort of begs the question of what he was out there apologizing for in the first place.
He had, you write, the look of a hunted man.
Well, and he is. I mean, you know, it's one thing for the, Democrats like Chuck Schumer in the Senate to call for your resignation. I mean, that's something of a badge of honor for an administration official. But even the guys like John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, who's very loyal to the administration, was saying, you know, this really doesn't look good. And he said, you know, the best he could say for Gonzalez was that he should have a fair trial before the hanging. But he wasn't sort of ruling out the hanging, which is not exactly what Gonzalez wants to hear.
Well, the president at his joint news conference today in Mexico with the Mexican president, Felipe Calderon, was asked about this. And he, too, adopted the passive voice. Mistakes were made.
This must be required. It must be something that's injected into them when they take office. That particular phrase, I mean, it sounds Nixonian. I think it was actually Reagan and Iran-Contra. And Bush used it again when he talked about the weapons of mass destruction controversy. I just can't seem to get around it. I mean, I think he fortunately avoided saying that Gonzalez was doing a heck of a job.
You know, Dana, it's kind of funny. President Bush is on this Latin American tour, and he's gone out of his way not to say the name Hugo Chavez, and you get a sense that he'd rather not say Alberto Gonzalez as well. But I want to ask you a question, though. Does this hurt Gonzalez's chances of being Supreme Court Justice?
Oh, well, no,
Harriet Myers is next in line, I thought.
That's right.
Yeah, no, they will have to bring back Myers as a result of this. But it seems like everybody on the court is taking their vitamins and doing their exercise. So Stevens is trying to run out the clock here and not give Bush a chance at this. But that, you know, with all the tension up on the Hill right now, that is one circus we don't need.
Let's see if we get a caller on this. Judith is with us. Judith calling us from Berkeley, California.
A friend of mine told me that it was on television that when she was Attorney General Janet Reno fired all the U.S. attorneys in the Clinton administration. She did it to get rid of the old, I guess, former Bush ones.
Ken Rudin?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's true that any time a new administration comes in, Clinton got rid of all the Bush senior U.S. attorneys. When Bush came in, he got rid of the Clinton U.S. attorneys. But the fact that the administration for 3 months have been saying that political pressures were not being used, and we find that they were, I mean, we have seen it in the past. I think that's what the really problem is.
So it is true that Janet Reno did get rid of all.
Well, the Clinton administration did get rid of the Bush senior U.S. attorneys in 1993, yes.
Well, similarly, Dana Milbank, when the Bush junior...
When you say senior, do you mean it was not all of them? Because I think...
No, he's talking about the first President Bush as Bush senior.
Yeah, every administration, whenever time an administration comes into power, everybody tenders their resignation, and you start fresh with a whole new round of appointees. That's how everything is done. What's unusual here is this is being done sort of in the middle of a term, and you know, actually, the White House, a couple of years after the 2004 election, floated the idea of sacking everybody and starting afresh. It was actually Gonzalez and his chief of staff who said, "No, that would be too disruptive," and then they went down this path, and which of course proved equally disruptive to Gonzalez, at least.
Here's an email question from Brad in La Verne, California. If you could talk about the relationship between the United States Attorney General, that's Alberto Gonzalez, and Senator Patrick Leahy, who is now the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I believe he came out yesterday and said he was not particularly happy with the Attorney General. But other than that, I'm not sure that there is an outstanding relationship between Leahy and Gonzalez. Is that right, Dana Milbank, as far as you
know?
Well,
it's presumably better than his relationship with Dick Cheney. There's been a lot of tension, you know, for years. First, when Gonzalez was in the White House counsel's office over, you know, what documents would be turned over. Leahy is no pal of Gonzalez. I mean, the interesting thing about that press conference yesterday is Leahy was standing next to Cornyn, and it was on a completely different subject, but they were asked about Gonzalez, and to the surprise of many, Cornyn agreed with Leahy and said this is a big problem.
And here's one from Jennifer in New York City. Please discuss the newly appointed Arkansas Attorney General Tim Griffin. I've read he was instrumental in implementing a scheme to target voting ballots of minorities and other suspected Democrats, which is, she says, a felony. Did the Bush administration just put the fox in charge of the hen house? Isn't this the allegedly the fellow who's the friend of Karl Rove?
friend of Roe's, actually worked for Roe and was involved in Republican campaigns. I don't know about his the resume of what activities he's done, but this is one case. This is the one case where the administration never disputed there was a political consideration. They were right up front in saying they pushed out the other guy to make room for somebody Carl wanted in there.
But in the process of their handling of this, Dana Milbank, it seems that the administration has managed to blow up what had been a sort of inside-the-beltway curiosity into something approaching a scandal.
I think it's more than approaching. I think they have officially reached category 3 scandal here. It could get worse, but and it's the same thing every time. It's not we have to repeat everybody. It's not the crime. It's the cover up. So here this would not have created a scandal if they just were up front in the first place. It might have been a bad story for a couple of days, but it was the act of saying this had nothing to do with politics and that the White House was not involved. Now, what everybody's hopping mad about on Capitol Hill is that they were lied to, or they were at least misinformed, depending on what the motive was for it. And that's how you get members of Congress mad in both parties. So they've really turned this into a balance of powers issue that it didn't have to be.
Dana Milbank, thanks very much.
Sure thing.
Dana Milbank, the Washington Post national political reporter, joining us today from the offices at the Washington Post. You're listening to The Political Junkie from NPR News.
You know, Neil, for those of us with long memories, remember the same exact thing happened. It was only one U.S. attorney, not seven. But in 1978, in the Jimmy Carter administration, Carter came to power saying he would not apply politics to any kind of prosecution appointments. There was a U.S. attorney in Philadelphia who was investigating a corrupt Democratic congressman. Jimmy Carter said, "I have nothing to do with it." But as it turned out, Jimmy Carter did not tell the truth. He was very responsible for the firing of a guy named David Marston, who was fired by Attorney General Griffin Bell. The Republicans made a big stink out of it. Democrats said, "This is the way it happens. You know, we're the ins and you're the outs, and too bad." But it's very funny how it comes back to haunt you. We've seen this before, just that the name of the party has changed.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about the campaign for 2008 and the ongoing drama there. The field of candidates for the Republican nomination already crowded. And this week, Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska decided he might be a candidate if he thinks about it for the rest of the year.
It was probably one of the more... You always remember where you were, like when man landed on the moon or when the Berlin Wall came down. I'll never forget where I was March 12th, 2007, when Chuck Hagel had that dramatic press conference in Omaha announcing his political plans. And basically he said, I don't know. I mean, it was amazing. He let us all think that this was going to be some kind of a major thing. Political correspondents from all over the country flocked to Omaha, which is always a nice place to be in March. And ultimately, he just did not make a decision, which is kind of pretty remarkable. We all were left standing, well, what was that all about?
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Leon. Leon with us from Athens, Ohio.
Yes, Neil. I'm glad you turned the conversation in this direction. In light of the recent revelations of Newt Gingrich about his affair while he was influential in the party, and in light of the fact that he is preparing or investigating a run for the presidency on the Republican end, this party has always been the party that seems to promote themselves as the moralist of the two parties. I'm interested in your guest comments about his recent revelation in light of Clinton, what their party did to the Clinton administration behind the Lewinsky thing, mm-hmm. and that Rudy Giuliani is one of the top front runners, and his moral stance where marriage is concerned is very questionable.
Well,
you comment on that.
Okay, Ken Rudin?
Well, I mean, Leon has basically talked about what's the problem with a lot of conservatives have with the Republican front runners. You have Newt Gingrich, who's very high up in the polls, who admitted that while he was trying to oust Bill Clinton and the impeachment over Monica Lewinsky, he was having an affair with a member of a congressional committee. Rudy Giuliani has been married three times, has no relationship with his kids. John McCain has been married twice. It's ironic that it's the Mormon in the field who's only had one wife. I wouldn't think of that, but that's with Mitt Romney with only one. I'm sorry, Neil gave me a face.
I did.
But the point is that the Republican Party is always been the pro-family values party, and you have leading Republican candidates who have questionable incidences in their past.
Not that Democrats are any less or more moral, but that they don't make such a big case.
And the voters don't seem to care as much. Democratic voters don't seem to care as much as Republican voters do.
Well, let's also talk briefly about the story that's coming out from campaign consultant Bob Schrum, an advisor to Democratic candidates. He says that he was the guy who talked John Edwards into voting for the war authorization back when John Edwards was a member of the United States Senate. And, this is a little embarrassing for John Edwards,
This is the last thing that John Edwards wanted to hear, because basically Edwards is trying to appeal to the American public, the Democratic electorate, as a genuine, sincere, not a poll-driven candidate. And here we have his former advisor, Bob Schrum, in this soon-to-be-released memoir that says that, you know, it was political reasons why I had Edwards vote for the war resolution in 2002. Now, Edwards thinks this is wrong. He said, no, I really voted for it on the merits. But again, it calls into question how politics plays in decisions like that. We see Hillary Clinton, Chris Dodd, Joe Biden, John Edwards all running away from their 2000 vote. The last thing Edwards wants to hear is that it was a political decision in 2002.
And the last thing he wanted to do was have to stand up and say, no, I made that decision to vote for the war all on my own.
That's right. Although he has said that he was misled by President Bush as another strange badge of honor for a candidate.
Now imagine lying to Congress. Where does that come from? Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us today.
Neil.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. You can read his new Political Junkie column every Wednesday at npr.org. Catch his Politics, It's All Politics. That's also on our website at npr.org. And you can catch him next Wednesday here on Talk of the Nation. He joined us in Studio 3A.
I'll be at CBS on Friday.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.
Yeah, I'll make you glad you got me in with everything I do. And I'll defend until the end the old red, white, and blue. I want to grow up to be a politician. For land.